Welcome to Aviation Intelligence Weekly with Sarah and Mike, your guide to the aviation industry. Welcome to Aviation Intelligence Weekly. I'm Sarah.
And I'm Mike. Today we're digging into GE Aerospace's second quarter 2026 10Q filing, dated July 16th, 2026. This is a company that has completed its transformation into a pure-play aerospace engine manufacturer, and the numbers coming out of this quarter are striking. Mike, let's get right into it. Sarah, if we reduce this filing to one sentence, it's this. GE Aerospace is executing a volume-driven revenue surge that is simultaneously compressing its own margins, revealing the cost of growth at scale in a supply-constrained environment. Based on this filing, GE Aerospace is operating in mid-cycle expansion. Demand is robust, the backlog is swelling, deliveries are accelerating, but the friction costs of that acceleration are eating into profitability faster than revenue is growing.
That's a sharp framing, and I want to hold you to it as we work through the evidence. Let's start with the material changes versus where this company stood a year ago, because the top-line numbers are genuinely eye-catching.
They are. For the 3 months ended June 30th, 2026, total revenue came in at $13.35 billion, up $2.3 billion, or 21%, compared to the 3 months ended June 30th, 2025. To put that in context, a 21% year-over-year revenue increase for a company of this scale, one that was already generating over $11 billion in a single quarter, is not a routine number. That's the kind of growth rate you'd associate with a company earlier in its recovery cycle, not one that's already at this revenue base.
And the filing is explicit about what's driving it?
Very explicit. In the consolidated results section, management states that equipment revenue increased, quote, driven by increased engine deliveries and improved pricing, and services revenue increased due to, quote, increased internal shop visit volume and work scopes, higher spare parts, volume, and pricing. So you have a dual engine of growth, pun intended, with both the equipment side and the high-margin services side firing simultaneously.
Net income also moved. Walk us through that.
Net income increased 16.9% year-over-year from $2.03 billion for the period ending June 30th, 2025, to $2.37 billion for the period ending June 30th, 2026. EPS moved from $1.89 to $2.26, a 19.6% increase. Now here's where the causality chain gets interesting. Revenue grew 21%. Net income grew only 16.9%. That gap is not accidental. It's the margin compression story, and it's the central tension in this filing.
So revenue is outrunning profitability.
Correct. The filing is direct about this. Profit margin for the quarter was 21%, which sounds healthy, and relative to most industrial companies it is, but it represents a decrease of 70 basis points versus the same quarter last year. On the six-month basis, the compression is even more pronounced. Profit margin of 19.4%, down 270 basis points year over year. Operating profit margin on a non-GAAP basis was 21.7% for the quarter, down 130 basis points. The causality chain here is straightforward. If higher install engine deliveries continue to carry dilutive economics, and if growth investment keeps accelerating, then margin recovery gets pushed further out even as the top line keeps climbing. That changes the investment case from a margin expansion story to a volume and patience story.
Let's move to what management is actually saying in the MD&A, because the language they choose tells you a lot about how they're thinking about the business.
The tone in this filing is confident, but operationally candid. Management opens the business overview by stating, quote, "We expect a significant ramp in our delivery of engine units and services for newer product platforms in the years ahead to meet this demand." That's a forward-looking commitment, not a hedge. They're telling you the volume acceleration is intentional and expected to continue.
What about the supply chain? That's been a persistent issue across the aerospace sector.
They don't sugarcoat it. The filing states, quote, global material availability continues to cause disruptions and have impacted our production and delivery of equipment and services to our customers. And then they follow with, quote, "We expect the impact of supply chain constraints and inflation will continue, and we are continuing to take action to mitigate the impacts." That's a notable combination. Acknowledging the problem, committing to mitigation, but not claiming it's solved. The phrase "will continue" is doing a lot of work there. They're not telling investors this clears up next quarter.
And yet the delivery numbers are actually improving despite those constraints.
That's the nuance. Management notes that, quote, "Aftermarket output and engine deliveries have continued to improve quarter over quarter, and the hard data backs that up. Internal shop visit revenue grew 30% in the first half of 2026. Total engine deliveries increased 37%. LEAP engine deliveries, the next generation narrowbody platform, increased 41%. Those are not incremental improvements. That's a step change in throughput, which tells you the supply chain investments are yielding results, even if the constraints haven't fully cleared.
There's also a tariff dimension to this quarter that's worth unpacking.
Significant dimension. Management describes operating in what they call a, quote, "highly dynamic tariff environment." Two things happened in this quarter that are material. First, the Supreme Court ruled against tariffs imposed under the International Emergency Economic Powers Act, the IEEPA, and as a result, GE Aerospace submitted refund requests and received a portion of previously paid IEEPA tariffs in the second quarter. Second, a zero-for-zero tariff agreement on aerospace equipment was established with the EU, the UK, Japan, and Korea. Management is monitoring the situation and will, quote, "evaluate any changes to the applicability of tariffs to our business as they occur." The refund is a one-time tailwind. The zero-for-zero agreement is structurally positive for the business model.
Let's shift to the financial red flags and confirmations, because there are a few things on the balance sheet side that deserve scrutiny.
The headline that jumps out is stockholders' equity. It decreased 7.8% year over year from $19.14 billion as of June 30th, 2025 to $17.64 billion as of June 30th, 2026, for a company generating $2.37 billion in net income in a single quarter. A declining equity base is a signal worth examining. The filing doesn't provide a granular breakdown of what's driving that decline in this excerpt, but the combination of share repurchases and dividends, which management explicitly commits to continuing, is the most likely structural explanation given the capital return language in the MD&A summary.
Is that a red flag or a confirmation of capital allocation discipline?
From a capital allocation lens, it reads as intentional. Management states that liquidity of $10.3 billion is deemed sufficient to meet business needs, and they are committed to returning capital via dividends and share repurchases. So the equity decline is not distress. It's a deliberate balance sheet optimization. The red flag framing would apply if free cash flow deteriorated, but this filing doesn't give us evidence of that. What it does give us is a confirmation that management is prioritizing shareholder returns, even while investing aggressively in manufacturing capacity. That's a high wire act. You're simultaneously spending on growth and returning capital. If supply chain costs spike or demand softens, that dual commitment gets stress tested fast.
The causality chain there being, if growth investment requirements increase beyond current projections, something has to give, either the capital return program or the delivery ramp.
Exactly. And management has telegraphed that the delivery ramp is non-negotiable. They're planning to invest $1 billion in U.S. manufacturing and hire 5,000 U.S. workers in 2026. That's a concrete public commitment. So if pressure mounts, the capital return program is the more flexible lever.
Let's talk about risk disclosures, because the filing flags something geopolitically that I want to make sure we address.
The Middle East conflict is the most specific risk called out. Management states they are monitoring, quote, "recent developments related to the conflict in the Middle East and the potential impact on the commercial aerospace industry, including lower utilization and increased prices, which can result in adverse effects on our airline customers. They then enumerate the downstream risks to GE Aerospace specifically: lower volume related to shop visits, spare parts, and spare engines, lower profitability of long-term contracts, and customer credit implications. That's a fairly comprehensive risk enumeration. The important qualifier is that management states the conflict, quote, did not result in a material impact on our operations in the 6 months ended June 30th, 2026. So it's a watch item, not a current impairment.
And the filing notes no new or significantly escalated risk factors versus the prior filing?
Correct. The risk factor section did not surface new or escalated items beyond what we've discussed. The tariff environment, supply chain constraints, and geopolitical monitoring are all consistent with the operating environment management has been navigating. One thing worth noting for the aviation sector specifically, GE Aerospace's risk profile is asymmetrically tied to airline health. If airline customers face credit stress, which the Middle East risk scenario could accelerate, the long-term service agreement profitability takes a hit. Management acknowledged that explicitly.
Let's move to liquidity and the balance sheet in more detail, because $10.3 billion in liquidity is a number that needs context.
It does. $10.3 billion in liquidity is a substantial buffer for a company of this size, and management characterizes it as sufficient to meet business needs. The filing commits to continuing dividends and share repurchases, which signals confidence in cash generation. The remaining performance obligation, the RPO, which is essentially the contracted backlog, increased $20.2 billion, or 11%, just from December 31st, 2025 to June 30th, 2026. That's in a single six-month period. The RPO now sits at a level that provides multi-year revenue visibility, which is the structural underpinning of the liquidity confidence. When you have that much contracted future revenue, you can make aggressive capital commitments with more certainty.
The RPO growth is really the story within the story here.
It is, and it breaks down by segment in a way that's revealing. The CES segment, Commercial Engines and Services, drove $15.4 billion of that RPO increase, up 9% from year-end 2025. The DPT segment, Defense and Propulsion Technologies, added $4.8 billion, up 19%. The defense RPO growing faster on a percentage basis than commercial is a notable dynamic. It reflects what management describes as, quote, defense and systems equipment orders outpacing revenue recognized, which means the defense pipeline is building faster than they can deliver into it.
Let's get into the segment breakdown directly, because the two segments are telling very different stories.
They are, and the contrast is instructive. On the commercial side, CES delivered revenue up $2.1 billion, or 27%, for the quarter versus the same quarter last year. Profit was up $400 million, or 20%. So revenue grew faster than profit. Again, that margin compression dynamic. Management attributes the profit increase to shop visit volume, spare parts, and pricing, but notes it was, quote, partially offset by the impact of higher install engine deliveries, higher growth investment, and inflation. Install engine deliveries are margin dilutive in the near term because you're essentially subsidizing the relationship to capture the high margin aftermarket over the engine's life. The 30% shop visit revenue growth and the 41% LEAP delivery increase are the proof points that the strategy is working, but the cost of executing it is visible in the margin line.
And on the defense side?
DPT is a cleaner story, at least on the margin side. Revenue up $500 million, or 16%, for the quarter. Profit up $100 million, or 18%. Profit grew slightly faster than revenue, which is the inverse of the CES dynamic. Management cites volume and price as the drivers, partially offset by inflation, mix, and incremental investments in next-generation products. The contract wins are concrete. A NAVAIR contract for T-408 engines for the Marine Corps CH-53 1000 King Stallion helicopter, and a contract with Turkish Aerospace Industries for the F-404 engine integration into Turkiye's Hürjet trainer. Defense is a slower growth, more stable margin business, and in this filing, it's performing exactly as that description implies.
Let's close with what traders and analysts should be watching, and I want to make sure we revisit your core thesis before we wrap.
A few things to monitor closely. First, the margin trajectory. Management has guided that supply chain constraints, and inflation will continue. The question is whether pricing power, which is clearly present, given the explicit references to improved pricing across both segments, can outrun those cost pressures. If operating profit margin stabilizes or recovers from the 130 basis point decline we saw this quarter, the thesis shifts toward a more favorable risk reward. If it continues compressing, the volume story starts to look less compelling.
What about the RPO and backlog as a forward indicator?
The RPO is the most important leading indicator in this business. A $20.2 billion increase in 6 months is extraordinary. The deals announced, United Airlines and Delta selecting GEnx engines for Boeing, 787 orders, American Airlines and Copa selecting LEAP engines, Ryanair signing a long-term material services agreement covering their entire fleet of roughly 2,000 engines. These are not small transactions. They lock in revenue streams measured in decades, not quarters. Watch whether RPO growth continues to outpace revenue recognition. If it does, the backlog is building faster than they can work through it, which is a high-quality problem.
And the counter thesis might what would prove us wrong.
Two specific scenarios. First, if margin compression reverses, meaning if the next one or two quarters show operating profit margin expanding back toward the 23% range that would be consistent with a company not absorbing heavy growth investment costs, then the mid-cycle expansion thesis is too conservative. That would signal GE Aerospace has cracked the code on scaling deliveries without proportional cost drag, and the investment case becomes significantly more compelling. Second, if the Middle East conflict escalates materially and airline customers begin deferring shop visits or renegotiating long-term service agreements, the services revenue growth, which is the highest margin component of the business, would be the first casualty. Shop visit revenue grew 30% in the first half. A reversal there would crack the foundation of the entire growth narrative.
So, where does the full weight of evidence leave the thesis?
The thesis holds, and I'd actually sharpen it. GE Aerospace is in mid-cycle expansion, executing a deliberate volume ramp that is temporarily diluting margins in exchange for long-term backlog and installed base dominance. The evidence from the segment analysis, the RPO data, and the delivery statistics all confirm the strategy is working. The margin compression is real, but it's the cost of a conscious choice, not a sign of deteriorating competitive position. From a valuation framing standpoint, at current margins, this equity is priced like a company in the early stages of a multi-year earnings ramp. The market is being asked to look through near-term margin dilution toward a future where the installed base generates decades of high-margin aftermarket revenue. Whether that patience is warranted depends entirely on whether the delivery ramp continues without a demand shock.
That's a precise and grounded read of a genuinely complex filing. Mike, thanks for walking us through it.
Always. This one had a lot of moving parts.
That's a wrap on this week's episode of Aviation Intelligence Weekly. A reminder that everything discussed today is drawn directly from GE Aerospace's 10Q filing for the second quarter of 2026. Nothing in this episode constitutes investment advice. We are analysts discussing public filings, not financial advisors. Do your own due diligence. I'm Sarah.
And I'm Mike. We'll see you next week.